One way to look at success testing or qualification or demonstration testing is through success testing. And there's a couple of variants of this, but one of them is pretty simple. And it's one of those five formulas that I think every reliability engineer should know. Actually, that came from Dick Moss from the Iris, Coombs, and Moss book, where he basically advocated that reliability engineering is really understanding five key formulas. And the success formula, based on the binomial distribution, is one of those formulas, in my opinion. Before we get to the binomial, you can also get to setting up sample sizes or to evaluating test results based on the beta distribution. And there's a table in most good statistics books, and you should probably make sure you have one as a reference for the sitting for the CRE exam. It's basically the idea is that I take some number of samples and evaluate them, and I count the number of successes that occur. And in this case, R is the number of successes. And so this is a piece of a table where N is the sample size of my evaluation, and R is the number of successes. So if I have two samples and none of them pass, I can say let's say Y is the confidence, 90% confidence, it's a type 1 confidence, that I have about a 3.4% probability of success. That's my reliability. So it's pretty dismal. It's as expected because I had all of them fail of the two samples I was running. On the other hand, if I'm running, and we'll take a look at an example in the next slide, try not to get ahead of myself. So we can also use this distribution table to design a test. And depending on what level of confidence and reliability you're looking for, you could find that value in the, or some value close to what you're looking for, and determine, say, with 75% confidence that if four samples run and all succeed, then we have a successful test showing at least the 75% reliability, which is the lower bound, with 75% confidence that that sample represents the population. Now, what's this test? It's not defined in any particular place or way because it's really dependent on your product. If your product is a communications box that should work for 20 years, you may end up doing an accelerated life test for the salient failure mechanisms. But this table gives you an indication of what kind of sample size you were going to need to do that. Now, this one segment of the test of the table I have doesn't really demonstrate very high reliabilities. So you may use other styles of testing to get more precision and more confidence, or use more samples, which this table does show in its full sense. The idea, though, is that we can evaluate different scenarios and confidence levels all within one table, but you'll find that as you allow failures to occur, so if I run four samples and have one failure, three successes or one failure, I get a little bit more precision, a little more the lower bound comes up a little bit compared to when I have zero failures. So by allowing failures in your sample size, one, you're going to require more samples to show a certain level of reliability, but you end up gaining on a little bit of the power or the increase in the type 2 confidence confidence level of the test. So there's a number of trade-offs in this, and it's just one way to go about determining sample size for a particular test. Now let's take a look at a quick example. So let's say I have a vendor provides me a data sheet, and one of the tests they ran had four samples tested, and none of them failed. Now, it's not uncommon to see data sheets with standard tests or various types of tests run, and no failures. It for whatever reason, seems to be an anathema to list failures on product testing. Although would prefer to see that, and I have a much more confidence that the data and the testing is relevant for the product if I can confirm that the failure mechanisms are appropriate as expected. But anyway, so I get this data sheet. It's got four samples tested, and we had zero failures. What's the lower 95% confidence bound for the reliability? All right, so let's go back to the snippet of the table. We had four samples, and none of them failed. So we had no failures, four successes, and we wanted 95% confidence. So it's this lower right-hand number in my table, which is about 55% reliable as my lower bound. So what it's basically saying is that with 95% confidence, we know that the reliability is at least 55% or higher. Now, if 55% or even 60% reliable is good enough for your particular application, then you're done. But if you're looking for a 90% confidence, it's going to take a lot more samples in order to show that. So this... So this beta distribution in this table is a great quick way to evaluate vendor data sheets or test reports or test data. But likewise, it's a pretty useful tool when you're trying to rough out how many samples you need to evaluate a particular claim or a particular specification you're trying to meet or to demonstrate. So we got our example, got our answer. So this is the success testing. If you use the beta distribution, you'll notice that there's some there, like the one in our example, where there were zero failures. Or you can use the binomial equation. And likewise, if you have zero failures, in either case, you can solve for n, and you'll get something that looks like this, the natural log of 1 minus the confidence divided by the natural log of the reliability. So let's say I want to have a 90% confidence that we have at least a 90% reliability. Well, I use that example, and I think I've used this one before, is that you need just, it's like 21 in a fraction samples, so you round it up to the next level and of whole samples, and you end up with 22 samples. So if those 22 samples operate for the equivalent of a lifetime, then we can say that we have 90% confidence with 90% reliability or better. If you have a failure, then this formula doesn't work anymore. We'll have to go back to the beta distribution and figure out what happened. If the number, say 22 samples and we had one failure, what does that demonstrate at some confidence level? And so this little formula is really easy to remember. I created a simple spreadsheet that I use regularly as I'm either planning testing or evaluating vendor data when I don't have any other information, and especially when there's zero failures. Now, having zero failures is pretty common because it is pretty efficient to demonstrate the lower bound of reliability. The caveat, though, is that if you have any failures, then you're kind of stuck. You either have to accept a really low confidence and or reliability or run the test again with more samples. So this is one of those formulas that I regularly use and remember because it comes in handy during meetings or discussions to, one, talk about sample size, or two, evaluate vendor claims. So if I'm using this pass-fail approach in these kinds of demonstration tests, whether using binomial, beta, or the success test formula, what do I lose? And I've talked about this idea of attribute-type data, pass-fail-type data, in the past. But think about it. What do we actually give up by using the test passed or the test failed and then do the analysis, versus using time-to-failure data? So give that some thought and add a note into the comments or send me an email. Let me know what you think. What comes to mind that we lose by using this approach? In the next section, we'll take a look at product reliability acceptance testings, PRAT, and we'll take a look at some of the pros and cons and approaches that are used in doing that.